Thanks for listening to Fluff and Crunch, where we talk about the connection and sometimes disconnect between system, setting, and story in tabletop RPGs.
Brock Masterson in the studio, bringing you a rapid reaction, late-breaking news about Star Trek Adventures 2nd Edition Quick Start Release, the 24th of April, 2024. Chris, you're on site. Tell us about these latest developments. How's that?
That was excellent.
We well call done, that news wanker. How's that?
You should change your job and
oh,
become a
Oh, my golly.
News
if only I didn't have a soul, I could. But let's talk about pleasant things. Let's actually talk about this. So this thing dropped this morning and we decided, hey, our schedules on opposite sides of the planet coincided enough that we could do a really rapid reaction to the Star Trek Adventures 2nd Edition Quick Start, which just released. There is a link in the notes. And of course, you are supposed to...
like, subscribe, join the conversation...
on the Discord or YouTube, tell your friends.
Yeah, leave a comment.
All that.
Yeah.
Do all that crap. Well, let's talk about it. It's a 48-page PDF. It's free. It introduces a slice, I'd say, because there are clearly some things that are not in the Quick Start rules, but it's a Quick Start, go figure. Introduces a slice of the new rules and provides a short adventure that I have to say feels... very like boilerplate, not in a bad way, Star Trekian, has some pre-generated characters. And so if you are coming to the Star Trek Adventures new, or you're an existing player and you're interested in second edition, either or, it'll do the trick. What are your first thoughts? And we can go into the details. We can just tick off what's new and different and interesting.
Yeah, I think the important thing to start with is the vast majority haven't changed. Okay, mm-hmm. The attributes are still the same. The departments are still the same.
Although they used to be called disciplines.
I was going to say, they are now called disciplines. They are now called departments,
not disciplines. They've aligned them with the six stats, the departments on ships. So a character now has attributes, departments, focuses, talents.
The idea of focus is still the same. Traits are a bit more front and center, but technically traits were in the last version of Star Trek. Yep. It's just a more obvious here. It's, you know, like I didn't even know they were a thing in Star Trek Adventures.
Yeah, this strikes me as a response to the refinement and clarification of traits in other 2D20 systems over time, and they are now feeding that back into Star Trek Adventures. Now, an interesting thing about it is that, you know, traits are traits. They still do the same things that they did in other... in the previous edition, allow it, disallow it, make it harder, make it easier. But they've also added a different kind of trait. I'm not really sure if there's a lot of value add in this, but they have potent traits. And a potent trait is a trait that you would put a number next to that is two or more, because the default is that any trait is a value one, which means it would either be a plus one or minus one if you had to adjudicate it as a difficulty affecting trait. A potent trait is one that's more salient and therefore has a number higher than one. Like I said, I'm not really sure that...
It just means the difficulty is going to be one higher. I have to say, reading through it, I don't think it makes it super clear what traits actually do, considering there's half a page, more than half. In fact, there's basically a whole page designated traits. I'm not sure it specifically says that a negative trait increases the difficulty by one and a positive trait increases it by one. It kind of just says, you know, traits are a thing. It more talks about traits being something you can do or not do. But
I wonder if, and I have now, I read the rules section of this Quick Start, but I have not read through the adventure. So maybe it's presented in there.
Possibly.
I mean, for example, it says in a situation where smoke may be a location trait, it may worsen and become thick smoke too, which counts as two traits. Okay, that's a thing.
But our basic tasks are the same. They kind of give you a thing to start with to say, basically implying don't roll unless you need to, but like,
And actually, I like that because it says when it comes up for a task, you ask the question, and you would answer yes, no, maybe. Yes, the character can achieve it without rolling. No, they can't, no matter what. And maybe they could, maybe they could, and that's when you roll. And I think that's a nice clean presentation of when to roll.
Difficulty is still on 0 to 5, same as usual. The basic how attempting a task is still the same. You still roll. You still buy dice with momentum or threat, yep. Same as before. You still earn momentum.
I like this. Page 11, it has this 7-step chart.
Yeah, it's nice.
Page 11, as paginated in the PDF, is this 11 or 7-step chart that shows how to roll a task. And I think for people coming from outside of 2D20 or maybe outside of gaming, this would be a really handy thing to print out, just hand out, or have around at the table, one or two copies. I like that. It's clean and makes a lot of sense.
There is a mention here in the task difficulty where it says the factors which affect the task difficulty are commonly represented by traits in the scene. Again, mm-hmm. it doesn't specify exactly how that works, but
although again,
we know
perhaps,
how it works, and it's a
perhaps
quick start.
That's mentioned in the adventure. Don't know.
Yeah. We get the stuff on improving the odds, which is, for I can see, teamwork and assistance, which are, you know, kind of the same.
Yeah,
I'm going to skip over some of this.
They tick off the different kinds of things that could affect how many dice you roll. Yeah. Or things like that. Okay, pretty standard and straightforward. The teamwork and assistance rules are the same. Opposed tasks are different. They have changed the mechanic for the opposed task, and I think they've actually made it easier. Opposed task, without going into the specific details, when two characters are opposing one another, the character that is being opposed. So for example, if someone for the umpteenth time locks out Harry Kim from any and every ship system because Harry Kim is incompetent, whoever alien who isn't familiar with Starfleet technology is able to lock out Harry Kim, that character's role would set the difficulty against which Harry Kim would roll. And if that character is successful, any momentum earned goes back to that character. So I actually think that is a cleaner way to handle opposed tasks rather than the comparing momentum that's been the norm in every other system. So that's something new and different. That's actually like
a, I mean, it essentially works more or less the same way, but yeah, the way it's spelled out is better.
But the idea of instead of having them both roll against a default difficulty one or different difficulties.
That always annoyed me because essentially you had this weird thing where both people could fail to do the thing, but what they were trying to do is stop the other person. So really, they're rolling against difficulty zero now, which is
I think the idea that, like, listen, I did something to the transport. I, you know, did something to the transporter to prevent it from working. How successful my effort was on the transporter should be reflected in how hard it is for you to undo what I did. So I like that. That's a smart, simple kind of thing. Success, cost, complications, that's all the same.
Yeah, what we don't get here is any kind of extended task rules or the scientific method. There's none of that at all.
But it's a quick start.
Yeah, but I just mean we can't tell if that has changed or not.
Correct.
Because scientific method could be changing. We don't know. So before we get into conflict, and we get a weird one here, because before they explain how combat works, we get a whole page about something called stress.
Wait a minute. Before you get to that, we didn't tick off momentum.
Has momentum really changed? It looks pretty much the same today.
It hasn't. And so I just wanted to throw it out there and say momentum is as I can see it, threat, momentum, the same. Determination functions in the same way, and you start off with 1 point. One thing I noticed that I thought was fascinating is that seizing the initiative as a momentum spend, you know, to allow two PCs to go in a row costs 2 momentum. That would also cost the GM 2 threat if they did it with NPCs. But for the GM to assert the first movement in an encounter, in other words, seize the initiative to go first, only costs 1 threat. So it's cheaper to grab it at the beginning of a combat encounter, but the same price for everyone later. It's a minor thing, but a thing. Okay, on to stress, because I think this is well worth paying attention to.
Well, it's before we've even got to kind of how combat works, and we get this page-long explanation of stress. Mm-hmm. But then it's not very clear. It says kind of stress is a limited ability to withstand stress, resist knocks, and avoid injuries.
Or dangerous situations.
Yeah, you can have a max amount of stress equals your fitness attribute. That could be changed by your choice of species, talents, and other factors.
Which, by the way, is lower than the original, because the original was fitness and security.
Yeah. Well, I know why that is. We'll come to it later. When you suffer stress, the severity, usually number between 1 to 5, tells you how much stress. If you max out your stress, you become fatigued. When fatigued, one attribute, you fail any task using that attribute and add one difficulty to all tasks.
Yeah, so here's a funky thing. Mm-hmm. I have noticed the 5 equals damage is gone. Or it seems to be. I don't see it anywhere.
Well, it's because essentially this is working different. Stress is now a thing which could be not just from combat. In fact, mm-hmm. you have to look really hard into the combat rules to find the mention of stress.
Correct.
Which we'll get to.
But the point is with stress, if you're not looking at this, if you haven't read this yet, your stress is equal to your fitness, which is lower than what it was before by, you know, a handful of points, because your security now department is not factored into it. But when you take stress, you mark it off. And when you get to zero, you take on this status called fatigued. And at that point, you pick one of your attributes. You then automatically fail any checks based off that attribute, and every other task based on any other attribute is +1 difficulty until you're no longer fatigued.
Yeah.
And then there are different ways to regain stress so you're no longer fatigued. And this is where, this is the first point where I'm like, this actually seems a touch tedious, but we'd see how it'd play out.
Yeah, I mean, the whole fatigue stress thing seems to be kind of a mixture of wounds in some of the other ones, where having wounds increase your difficulty, but also some of the other games where you actually mark off against an ability that says you can't use that when you've taken too much damage, which I think Dreams and Machines has something along those lines. So this is a bit weird, but it's the fact that when it's here, it's weird. It's the way it's explained. It's like, it's not really clear why you're getting the stress. But anyway, it tells us how we can recover stress, because stress is kind of different. I don't really want to go into this, but it does at least tell us very clearly we can recover stress by spending momentum and by taking rests.
And well, there are different lengths of rests with different kinds of qualitative dimensions to them. Yeah. So we won't go into the details, but there are breathers, there are breaks, and there's sleep. And this is where I think that it could be, They're creating a situation here where, based on the type of rest you do, you get back different amounts of stress. So it is creating a bit of a bookkeeping thing instead of, okay, the scene ends, you had time to recover rest in some way, shape, or form, but we're not really detailing it. You get all your stress back. This is now, you have to keep track of it. Not a big deal, but definitely different.
Yep. So then we start getting into combat rules. We start with environments and zones, which is pretty similar.
It's the same. Yeah, environment zones, the 5 zones, how they relate to one another, that's all the same.
So we get movement, which is the same, but then we have things about terrain, where going over or through certain kinds of terrain costs you momentum.
Yep.
Which I'm pretty sure that's different. I don't remember seeing any 2D20 game where you had to spend momentum to get over a terrain. Normally it was a case of, you know, you move slower or you make a roll. This is, you can spend the momentum, just get over it. If you don't have momentum, make a roll.
The way I would handle it, and the way I've handled this in some of the adventures that I've written, is I'll say, okay, this terrain is hard to get through. So instead of a minor action moving you to medium, you have to spend a minor to move within close, and you have to spend a full action to move to medium. You know, there's just a different economy, a different way of accounting for mud, barbed wire, whatever, entangling plants. This is all by momentum. So for example, moving through a swamp or unstable rubble would cost you 2 momentum, or obviously by threat to do it.
I can't stand this. I think this is a terrible idea. Linking momentum, which is generally a thing that you get from rolling well and that you want to spend, using it for movement isn't great. And then it basically says what you said. Oh, well, if you don't want to spend the momentum, or if you don't want to add threat, blah, 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 then you can do a sprint task, but it's a major action.
Yep.
And then the idea is that you're going to generate momentum, which can be spent on moving. But if you fluff your roll, then where you're stuck, but it's, I can see both sides of this.
I can see the idea of like, listen, let's provide some more things you can do with momentum. And when there are more options to do with momentum, you actually, in a way, you make momentum more scarce because it can go, yeah, it can go more directions, which then puts maybe a little bit of tension and pressure on the players in a situation where, you know, rough terrain or whatever, providing the roll as a way out with a default of difficulty zero means, you know, it, that to me seems a little like a perfunctory, like you go to the post office and they're like, go to window A to get a form to go to window B to get a form to come back to window A. That seems a little, but
I think the reason I don't like it is generally everywhere else in the all of 2D20, momentum is something good for the player. It's extra dice. It's cool things happening. It's extra damage to the bad guys. It's getting information. Here, it's a cost. It's a, there is a cost to you just walking up a cliff. And every other version of 2D20 is make a roll. Here,
or spend more. Yeah. Or just,
yeah.
It takes,
so here it's like a cost. So I'm not keen. Luckily, okay, I could just ignore it.
I'm curious about how it, you know, this is one of these things where I'm genuinely curious. Like when I looked at the opposed test, that seems right off the bat, okay, that I like that. That makes sense. This is like, I would like to see how this plays out at the table.
But then we get our minor actions, which, yeah, fine.
Yeah, aiming, the minor actions in combat are the same. The major actions in combat are pretty much the same.
And then make an attack starts the same. So choosing a weapon type, melee attacks and ranged attacks. Ooh, that's different because didn't they used to both be security? Is that different or is that the same?
No, those are the same. The daring and security for a melee attack, control and security is the default for a ranged attack. Difficulty one default for melee, difficulty two for range. That's all the same.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same as in most versions of 2D20.
It doesn't seem like that. There are some differences. I don't see huge departures, not up to this point.
Where we get it all very different is we now have resolved that if your attack succeeded, you inflict an injury, except you probably don't, but we haven't got to that bit yet. If the attack was an opposed task and the target won, they may either move out of reach or spend two men to counterattack, inflicting an injury upon you in return. Okay. And then, but you're a target. A character who suffers an injury may avoid injury. Now, it now says page 27.
Okay, well, avoiding injuries is later.
It's like, so let's just tell us right away.
Well, Ben. Anyway, so and so there is an example there. Shock. That's a good thing. Oh, that's rare.
Yeah, so
injuries, though, injuries are when you successfully hit an opponent during combat, they may become injured. Some environmental effects can come with it, blase, blase. When a character is hit by an attacker, is affected by a hazard, they suffer an injury. When you get hit, you suffer an injury.
Straight off.
You take on a trait, which would be like you got burned or you got bruised or you got slashed open or you got sprayed with acid or something like that. I mean, then that becomes something that's like narrative mechanical bridge there.
Oh, you were hit with one of those things which instantly kills NPCs, but for some
or
reason
that,
against players
or that,
doesn't.
A disruptor. Get this. All sources of injury also have a severity. The number normally between 1 and 5, which indicates how severe it is. The severity of an injury is important in a few different ways, explained below. When you succeed at an attack, you may spend 2 momentum to increase the severity by 1. This is repeatable, but you can't increase it by more than 2. So the most you could spend is 4 momentum to increase the severity by 2, whatever the severity, the default is for it. As in the original version, when you suffer an injury, you are defeated. You are knocked out. You fall prone. You lay there and whimper or something like that. Depending on the nature of the injury, whether it's stun or deadly, you either come back at the end of the scene or you die.
So when I'd read this point, because I had to read the next bit, it does take, well, I don't really want to go into it. There is rules, right, for how to recover. You can heal your friends and you know stuff like that. It gives us rules on stunning. But at that point, I was like, sorry, wait a minute. You take 1 hit from any weapon, like someone flicks you, and you drop, you're just defeated. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So we have to then read ahead. When you suffer an injury, you may avoid injury by taking stress. When you suffer an injury, you may suffer stress equal to the attack severity to ignore that injury. And then this is the bit that's weird. Having ducked out of the way at the last moment.
Well, so, okay, think of, okay.
I know the thing, but based on what that says, it says you are going to get hit by a weapon or you're going to get shot, but you duck out of the way, but you take stress.
Well,
instead.
Okay, think
you're
about
not hurt,
this.
Basically.
If stress leads first to fatigue, stress is less about like your guts got slashed open and your lunch is spilling out on your feet. Okay. And so if you are like, if you're in a, the vast majority of role-playing game systems do not account for this, but if you're in a melee fight, if you're in a hand-to-hand fight, virtually every hand-to-hand fight ends up on the ground, which it becomes some kind of like low-skill wrestling match.
Yeah, okay? Grab and pound.
That wears you out.
Yeah.
Really quickly, because your adrenaline is spiked, you're breathing heavily, and you're having someone physically resist you. That's what I think they're pointing to there.
It just, it doesn't say. I can imagine this coming out in the new core book and still being kind of a bit wishy-washily explained.
Well, anyway, the point is,
we have to go back to the stress rules, which we had earlier, which is why I had this weird issue, is because I read the stress and I was like, this seems to be in a weird place. And then you read through this and it's like you die on one. Oh, no, you don't die one hit. You spend stress.
Well, you're defeated. So here's the funky thing.
It feels like it could have been better explained.
You get punched. The way I'm reading this right now, you get punched, and like a mook in a cheap action movie, one punch, glass jaw, you hit the ground. Obviously, you're going to take stress instead. And then stress piles up, and then I suppose you go back to the stress rules, and then you could potentially become fatigued, and then that creates problems for you being successful because your difficulties go up. So it's like, okay, I can see that there's a feedback loop, a negative feedback loop that will cause problems for a character over time as they continue to take damage. Now there is an avoid injury mechanic. You can avoid one in the original rules. So it would appear to me that you could avoid multiples, but again, you and I have talked about how, you know, combat, like shooting at each other and clubbing each other with like, you know, a pipe wrench is really not like A-level Star Trek anyway.
So it's actually working pretty similar how it did before. If someone shoots you or hits you, you take some stress or harm or whatever. The difference now, and this is the bit that isn't fully explained, it's you can suffer stress to not take the injury. Now, as far as I'm remembering this correctly, in original edition, if your stress hit the maximum, you were taken out, you were defeated. That was it.
If you took one injury, that is, if you took 5 points or more at once, you were knocked down. This, you get punched in the nose. Unless you decide to take stress, it sounds to me like you're out.
Yeah, but you're going to choose to take stress.
Correct.
Now, the weird part I don't hear is, can you choose to take stress when you don't have any stress left? Because there's nothing in the reading of that. It says when you suffer any injuries, you may avoid injury by taking stress. So you choose to take stress, but your stress is maxed, so you are fatigued.
Perhaps.
I'm hoping they patch that in the core rulebook, because otherwise this basically means your characters are invulnerable.
You know how I would handle that? If hitting zero stress means you become an automatic failure with one of your attributes, for every additional point of stress you take after you're at zero, this is how I would house rule it immediately, is you have to tick off another attribute that you are an automatic failure at. Until eventually, I mean, it would take a while, but eventually you would be able to do nothing.
Yeah, it means unless they are more specific about that.
I haven't seen it. But it's a quick start.
Yeah, it is a quick start, but we've seen flaws in core rule books. I hope they do a better job of that in the core rulebook. But it just seems a bit needed. How it worked in Star Trek Adventures was fine. I'm not sure why they felt the need to kind of try it to some extent separate stress, but not separate it. It just seems a bit weird.
Something else about weapons and equipment. What they've done actually is they can't do effects because there are no challenge dice.
Which we've missed, because so there are no challenge dice, but we knew that, which is why you've not made it.
But they moved they moved some of the effects, like, for example, area or hidden. That's a quality, actually. Area, intense, piercing, those effects, those are now qualities.
Now you can spend momentum.
Yeah, and a weapon has, looking at the character sheets, weapons have an intensity. So there is an automatic amount of damage, stress that they do, that you could then add to as well. So I do like the simplicity of, you know, in momentum, you could add, depending on the game, either additional challenge dice to roll or additional points.
I mean, I can see why they removed it. I think challenge dice work when you've got a lot of combat and you need all these cool effects on weapons, and Star Trek isn't really about that.
Yeah.
They've obviously decided it wasn't worth having this extra set of dice.
But I see where you're coming from.
So it's a weird one, that. Especially because I've got loads of Star Trek combat dice.
I have some. I'm scanning through the adventure right now. And as I said, I'm not going to go into the details of it, but it is very Star Trekian.
Well, the one thing I have noticed, but I don't know how I can read into that, the NPCs they give you, they have attributes, they have departments, they have personal threat and a protection score, so which is armor. They have attacks and talents. It doesn't mention stress. So it does mention stress on the ones you can play as, the PCs. The PCs have a stress thing. It doesn't mention that. Now, I don't know if that's just because it's just their fitness, or actually if there is a kind of, you alluded to earlier, that if you hit an Orion free trader with an attack, they just go down. That's it, gone.
Okay, that's really fascinating. That's a good point, because actually if stress is always and only equal to fitness, then actually, you would want a separate track, because you're going to have to mark off points. And you're right, the player characters have that. I'm looking at Zara Kethex, who is a major NPC, does not have a stress breakdown, and the Orion Free Trader minor PC does not either. Here's another interesting thing. This major NPC has a personal threat pool of 10.
Which is massive.
Does that mean that this...
I don't know what she's spending that on. It's not a huge amount. Yeah, that's why I've gone back to look at the threat spends to see if there was a thing that NPCs spend threat to, like, reduce damage instead of having stress. But
right.
So the fact that it doesn't say stress doesn't tell us that NPCs go down in one hit. It just, because it could be a typo.
Yeah.
We don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if minor NPCs don't have stress, and if you hit them, they're done. As long as you get like one injury on them. But I would be surprised if that was the rule for major NPCs. But we don't know. Again, because it's a quick start, it's always that thing of, is it just missing something, or is that how it's going to be? There's no way of knowing. Or maybe you never get into combat with them, so it's not an issue.
Yeah, but you would spend threat to do things. Here it is. On one of the pages, it says, Game Master note, you can introduce the radiation spike complication at any time by spending 2 threat, even if the player characters transport over to the freighter successfully. So where does that threat come from? You start, the GM starts with 2 threat per PC at the table, but I'm trying to look for explanation for this personal threat pool of this Zara Kethex.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've seen things, or maybe we haven't seen things, of personal threat. Maybe I'm thinking of other games which have personal spend.
No, there are some beasties in, like,
Essentially, it means she gets 10 points to spend on whatever the hell she wants, but all she can really do with that is jump the initiative order and I guess she can use it for anything you can use momentum for. So she'd be really good at climbing through slushy mud and climbing over big things.
Yes,
she's got lots of momentum.
Now, there are there are a lot of examples, and this is good. As I'm scrolling through the adventure, there are lots of Game Master notes in orange on a wonderfully white background. Thank you very much.
Thank goodness.
There are lots of ideas for how to spend threat in that moment, not just in a generic sense, but I think that's really good. Oh, wait, here it is. On page 26, in the NPCs and injury box out, it says that minor NPCs are knocked out with 1 injury and they cannot They're defeated, that is, and they cannot choose to avoid an injury. Okay, a notable NPC or any supporting character with one or more values, I'm reading directly from this, suffers injuries as normal. And these, says, supporting characters may avoid injury as player characters do, but have only half the amount of initial stress. Okay, so I'm assuming those are supporting characters like from the first edition. Quote, while a notable NPC may spend threat to avoid injury, but they can only do so once per scene. Although I don't see how much that costs. So we've nailed it down. Your minor NPCs are defeated with one injury and they can't do anything about it. Whereas other types of NPCs have ways to avoid injury or by dumping it into their stress, which would then lead to fatigue. Okay.
So I think my first takeaway is this, is the main thing that we knew was going to happen was that we knew that challenge dice were going to go and they were going to go on, and then they've replaced damage then for weapons with a set number, which makes sense.
That you can affect with momentum spends.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
The kind of stress you can take in combat has come down, but now also doubles up for taking stress from other things. And then there's a kind of slightly badly worded explanation of what happens when you get hit in combat.
Talents are the same. Talents are explained on each of the character sheets. It looks like each of the player characters has 5 talents and you know, traits and focuses. Focuses work the same way. Each of the characters has a pastime, which is not described. But, I mean, again, it's a quick start. The point of a quick start is to get your head around the most elemental, the most core aspects of the mechanic, the game, and look at some characters and play through a short adventure. That's what a quick start is meant to do. It's supposed to just whet your appetite. So, like, for example, Lieutenant Zoe Hernandez's pastime is galactic politics. That sounds dreadful. Whereas Lieutenant Commander Burke Venn Jaxa is metallurgy. It's galactic. It sounds like a hobby.
All of the characters have a species talent. Did they have that before? Every single one of them.
Species talents were, in some cases, like optional talents. Like a Vulcan could take mind meld and could take the neck pinch and stuff like that.
Well, this one's got mind meld as well as mental discipline. So I don't know if every species has a talent that they all get or not. But who knows?
Poor Lieutenant J.G. Rashid Kemal. His first talent is Faith of the Heart. That makes me, if I were GM, he would die first. Because that references Enterprise, and that is just not okay.
That's the bog standard human, because the Zoe Hernandez has it as well.
Terrible. Okay, now here's an interesting thing. Rashid Kemal also has a talent called Attack Run, which has to do with Starship Combat. Starship Combat, as far as I can tell in this adventure, does not exist. It is not mentioned in the rules at all. So maybe there's something of Starship usage, but it appears that Starship Combat is not in this quick start.
An attack pattern major action.
Yep.
We don't know what that is. So yeah, at least you'll be able to take these and go beyond the quick start.
Opportunities in the quick start that explain how to use the ship as an assistance, part of an assistance role. So integrating the character with the potential of what the ship can do. And there is a ship sheet in here for the USS Challenger.
So there we go. What's your overall thoughts then?
There's nothing that is, I'm fine with it. I mean, I really want to see how this, I'm curious, this personal threat thing, how the threat is, or personal threat pool, I need to see explained.
The main thing that we knew was coming, that challenge dice were gone. I don't think that's an issue.
No.
The rest of what makes the game feel like Star Trek is all still in there. Yes, they've done some weird stuff with combat, but again, not an issue. I don't think that'll be a problem. So the main thing that I think now is important is to know what has happened to the scientific method and what's happened to Starship combat.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we've previously said the scientific method is very good, but not super well explained, but actually it works quite well, but it could be better explained. Star Trek combat is a complete ball ache, and hopefully they have improved Starship combat and streamlined it, but we'll have to wait.
Scanning through this adventure, it appears that a combat encounter is not expected and is something that you as a GM would basically have to write in. This is a very, like I said, this is very Star Trekian. They're not even, although there isn't a, you know, a double fisted Kirk punch involved. This is a like science and diplomacy type of mission, and dealing with these Orions, is something that you would highly likely not do so violently.
Yeah. It's funny because we have like 8 pages of combat. And then they don't bother giving you an opportunity to do combat, which is fine because Star Trek doesn't need to resort to combat.
No, it doesn't.
But the combat rules, you know, we have all the combat rules. So, but yeah, I think it looks fine. I think essentially it's telling us that they're not doing massive, awful changes and ruin in the game. It's probably, other than getting rid of challenge dice, it's going to be pretty much the same. And the characters look very similar
they do.
To what they looked like before. You know, they still have values.
Beyond that, too, I think that I can see where translating the original materials to the new would be really easy. I mean, think about it. You go through, you take existing PCs that you, or existing characters, NPCs, whatever, that are in the other books, and you know, depending on how this works out with major, minor, whatever NPC levels, you know, figuring out what their stress is really easy. It's just their fitness, if that's necessary. Figuring out weapon damage is super easy. You would just use the new reference. It appears that the you know, talents basically work the same, although I'm sure there would be some talents in the new book that are based off of an original form that maybe used or involved challenge dice in some way, shape, or form. So you would use the new version. If the old talent just, you know, has something to do with an additional action or another D20 or bonus momentum, I don't see how that would change at all. And the ship sheet looked pretty much the same too.
Ship still has six different systems,
and systems
that it used to have. So it still has departments, and it has the systems like it used to. It still has scale. It has resistance. I'm not sure what crew support is, but that's because I can't remember it.
Crew support is how many of, you know, the on the fly characters you make when a player's main character is not in the scene, and so they grab, now they're the medic, or they're the transporter technician, and so you make those little characters on the fly. Like when we were playing it, we had a notebook of all these little cards of those supporting characters, and crew support is the maximum number of supporting characters you can use in play in one session.
That's a really strange thing to need. I would have just thought if you need them, you need them.
Well, I to be perfectly honest, I don't really understand why that's a rule too, but I've never run into a problem with it because you usually don't run that many scenes that are where the main characters are gone in one session. So that's all.
All right. So there you go. It wasn't that rapid because you kept trying to point out all the small little details.
But they were still there. They're still there. All right. So we'll
put
this out.
But our timing list of doing this is quick.
If you run this, I have no hope of running this anytime soon because of my schedule and availability. But if you listening or watching out there run this anytime soon, or you think about it, we would love to hear your feedback as to how the thing actually runs at the table. I have no doubt that Jim Johnson and Al Spader and Michael Dismuke and those folks play tested the heck out of this thing. I'm no doubt about that, but I'm really curious what folks from the community think about it. Live long and prosper.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again. Have a great day. We look forward to talking with you.